This is Justice Radio. I'm Catherine Besteman, an abolitionist anthropologist, the coordinator of the Freedom in Captivity Initiative, and a current Soros Justice Fellow. Today, I am so thrilled to be speaking with fellow Justice Radio hosts Linda Small and Mackenzie Kelly about the new program that they are launching with Reentry Sisters. Welcome to the show, your show also, Linda and Mackenzie. So Linda, I'm going to come to you first. I'm going to ask you to just remind our listeners what Reentry Sisters is and how it got started.
Thanks so much for having us, Catherine. We're thrilled to be here to talk about Reentry Sisters, which is a nonprofit organization that helps women and girls come home from prison. And, you know, this is near and dear to our hearts. I'm system impacted. I spent 13 years inside Maine's prison system. And while there, it was heartbreaking to see how many women kept funneling through the system and leaving with absolutely no resources. So about a week before I left, I was sitting in my cell contemplating that and what could we do? And the idea for Reentry Sisters came about, and it started out as a way to build community, a statewide community of justice-impacted women, just maintaining those vital connections. And having a brave place where we could speak to one another, reach out to each other, share resources, and just know that we had someone who gets what we're going through. And so Mackenzie helped set up this Facebook page, and it grew organically, which told us both that there's desperately a need for that in this state, and no one else is catering to the needs of women specifically and female citizens who are justice impacted in Maine. And it's also very rare that organizations are doing that throughout the country. Most women are a small population. Women only make up 7% of the prison population here in Maine, and some were mostly ignored. So Reentry Sisters is about changing that narrative and providing women with resources and community to live their best life. And when I got home, I didn't have any of those resources, and I don't think you did either, did you, Mackenzie?
No, I definitely didn't. And thank you for having us, Catherine. I really appreciate it. Like Linda said, I was also system impacted. I was incarcerated for 7 years. And when I got out, you know, I thought I was really ready to come back to the community, and which I was to a certain extent. But, you know, the one thing I really missed when I was incarcerated, I missed my family on the outside. And then when I was outside, I missed my family from the inside. I really grew a sisterhood, if you will, a family of women while I was incarcerated that really was a huge support for me. So when I got out, I felt really alone. Like nobody understood what I was going through and just didn't feel right. So when Linda had approached me about this idea about Reentry Sisters, which was really about growing a support network, I was all in, right? Because we really didn't have those resources, or not at our fingertips, and didn't know where to find them. And it was really about getting that support together and having the resources at our fingertips to be able to give other women, you know, and just the capacity to say, I'm know how you feel, and you're not alone.
Thanks, Mackenzie. Thanks, Linda. I think it might be helpful for our listeners to hear from both of you about the challenges of reentry. You know, one might imagine you get convicted of a crime, you get sent to prison, your sentence ends, you come home to your family and community. How hard is that? And so what are the kinds of barriers that people in reentry face, first of all, and what are the barriers that might be more unique or specific to women reentering after a period of incarceration? Linda, I'll come to you first.
Thanks. I'm sorry we only have 28 minutes for the show. however, I'll hit some highlights, and then Mackenzie can add her own thoughts. The reality is here in the state of Maine, we have some of the harshest sentencing laws in the country. We also have some of the worst reputation for reentry support. And the reentry support that's out there is usually going to the men since they're the largest population, and that's generally what people think of. So there isn't a lot being offered to women. The other thing I'll say is that every sentence in Maine is a lifelong sentence. We have no way of expunging our record, which really means making it confidential. Background checks are ubiquitous, right? Every time that you apply for a job, every time that you apply for a place to live, apply for credit, you name it, whatever it is that you take for granted in going through life and just the basics like your education, all of those things, your record will haunt you. And it doesn't matter whether you made that mistake 2 years ago or 20 years ago, it is present in your life today, every single moment with everything that you're trying to do. So if you have the desire, and most justice impacted people do, they have the desire and the intention when they leave to turn their lives around and not go back into the system. But we're faced with tremendous stigma. That's a cultural issue. And that's the way we're portrayed by the Department of Corrections and the media. We think that incarceration solves our social issues with homelessness, mental health issues. We think that's how we get to public safety, and none of those things are true. So when we come home, we're faced with all those systemic barriers. In addition to that, 95% of the women walking through the door come in with trauma, come in as survivors of one form of abuse or another. And when you add the layer of incarceration on top of those particular stressors, it only compounds them, right? There is no healing while you're inside. You just compound the trauma. Now you come out, and emotionally and mentally, you're worse off than when you went in, and most of the time physically as well, since the health care is practically non-existent and the food is atrocious, quite frankly. So, in addition to trying to just hold yourself together in whatever wellness looks like for you, most people lose their family once they're incarcerated, unfortunately. And like I said, society is not welcoming us back. Society is still othering us in every possible way that you can think of. And that makes everything that you do far more difficult. And every piece of success is, 100 times harder than the person next to you that does not have a conviction history. And so, what do you think about that, Mackenzie?
Yeah. I mean, everything you said rings true, right? First off, when Catherine said, your sentence ends, and all I could think of was your sentence never ends. I always felt like I'd go in, I'd pay for my crime, I'd get out, it'd be over. No. That is just absolutely not the way that it works. It just never ends, right? First off, education was the first thing to go out for me. I literally was so enamored by everything on the outside. I just could not focus on any one thing, and what Linda had said about mental health, right? We are struggling with our mental health, substance use disorder, trauma, right? I mean, it's traumatic going into prison and then traumatic coming out. Nobody can prepare you for what that feels like. And aside from that, every small thing felt so monumental to me, that it just felt like it was insurmountable. So education first flew out the door for me. And then I was trying to find a job, and I couldn't even find a job packing boxes. I couldn't even get a call back. And that's because I had such a large gap in my employment history that you can't explain, so forget about the fact that ban the box is gone. Like, if I can't, what am I going to say, that I worked in the prison kitchen for 2 years? I mean, you can't put that on your resume. So yeah, that was definitely a huge hurdle for me.
Yeah, and I'd just like to add a couple of things. And Mackenzie, you can chime in to this too. When we're talking about reentry sisters being a sisterhood, there's a reason why we're focusing on women, not that we don't care about our brothers, dads, and sons who are incarcerated, because we do. But there are unique needs for women. Some of that is going back to the cultural issues of women's social roles seen, as the nurturers and the caretakers. And most of that is looked at like, you abandoned your family. How could you possibly do that? And that abandonment could be driven from poverty and not able to pay your fines and fees. It could be from unhealed trauma, which led you into substance use. And so instead of dealing with these social issues with help for women and moms, we criminalize them instead. And so we use the social roles almost like as a club, as more pain and suffering heaped on top of women and guilt trips and shame and all of those things. And when you go in front of a judge who's looking at you and judging you for who you are, like, why aren't you taking care of your kids? Why aren't you home taking care of your family? That weighs heavy, not only personally on the person, on the woman, but it's also in the mind of the judge and the district attorney and all of those other people. It's sort of this silent, it's unsaid, but it carries a lot of weight. And people should realize that because you're also on the way out, you're talking about gender discrimination. It doesn't matter if I have the same job as a man. I already know I'm not making dollar for dollar. Also, women, we're the ones that are trying to figure out childcare, right? And put food on the table. Most of us are single moms, trying to, keep our lives together. And there isn't quite the stigma of a man walking away from his family as there is a mom doing the same.
Thanks, Linda, for adding that. A friend who works in the Massachusetts arena of criminal legal reform was just mentioning to me a recent study that was done by a faculty member at her university who had tracked 50 women leaving prison in Massachusetts and what happened to them over the 10 years post-incarceration. And after 10 years, only one had stable housing and a job. Only one out of 50.
Wow, that's
And
terrible.
it's a chilling statistic. I actually have chills running down my spine right now.
And sadly, typical.
And I want to just remind our listeners that this is Justice Radio, and today we're talking with Linda Small and Mackenzie Kelly, who run Reentry Sisters, which is a nonprofit organization in the state of Maine that supports women reentering society from prison. We're going to now switch the conversation to talk about what makes a difference for women leaving prison. So, with the fact that your sentence doesn't end when you leave prison, and that there are these sort of perhaps extra burdens or extraneous burdens that women in particular face due to the weight of public opinion and public perceptions of, and I'm using air quotes here, bad mothers. And the fact that a lot of the more nurturing and caring responsibilities for maintaining parents, children, communities, family members falls on women's shoulders, and that this expectation is not alleviated by the fact that you just got out of prison, you walk out of prison, and you still gotta step, you're expected to step right back into your caring roles often. Reentry Sisters has devoted itself to trying to understand and figure out what are the resources that women leaving prison most need. So, Mackenzie, I'm going to come to you first because you mentioned the important role that education had played while you were on the inside and how difficult it was to sustain your educational journey once you left prison. For you, what were the things that were going to be the most important to your success? And by your success, I mean your ability to craft a stable life for yourself that involved housing and an ability to support yourself and an ability to develop a caring community for yourself. What are those most important pillars of reentry, stabilization, and success?
Well, thank you for that question, Catherine. First off, obviously you need safe housing and food, shelter, whatever, all the things, right? But really what I was missing was the support of my community. I had support from my family, but like I said, nobody really understood what it felt like for me to get out into the community and feel normal, whatever that looks like, right? And I know that we had talked about that and what that might look like. And we had talked about having an educational home, which just didn't quite play out the way that we had wanted it to. But really, it was just having a job and feeling like I could do it and that I deserved that, regardless of what that looked like. And because for a really long time, I didn't feel like I deserved it, you know? So.
So a support structure that continues to affirm your self-worth and your value to the people who love you and to society, stability in the form of a home and a job. And you mentioned the idea of sort of education as an anchoring point. So Linda, I'm going to come to you now. This new initiative that Reenter Sisters is launching is based on an educational cohort model. As I understand it, it's the first of its kind in the country. You are a nationwide pioneer in launching this model. And so I'm wondering if you can describe the model to us, the basis for it, why you're doing what you're doing, and how the launch is going so far.
Thank you for that lead-in, Catherine. Reentry Sisters Education Initiative is a cohort model because we recognize some of the things that Mackenzie said, which community is a huge part, right? To have that emotional support, a non-judgmental atmosphere, a place where women can uphold and support each other, but also hold one another accountable in loving kindness. And so the cohort model is based on those foundational pieces, but it's really was to figure out how to mitigate the over 90% dropout rate in education for transition. So if you start an education program while you're incarcerated in Maine, which you can do, during transition, there's an over 90% dropout rate because of those same things that we've been talking about during this show. You got to figure out where you're going to live. You got to put food on the table. You have to have income, all those things. And so we know, right, there's evidence that shows the higher your level of education, the less likely you are to go back to prison. So certainly we want women educated, but we also know that education will lead to opportunities and connections that you would never have had before. And it can lead to career paths that actually sustain you and your family rather than the typical jobs that people are offered when they leave, which are manual labor jobs, jobs that don't take a lot of intellectual capacity. We want to change that model. We want women to think in terms of careers, not jobs. So, in addition to this cohort model where education is the foundational piece, and I want to say a big shout out to Colby College, Colby Across the Walls program, who are supplying these classes to women, which will also open the doors to them and so many other avenues, people they would never meet before. And also, it gives an opportunity to help us change the narrative where folks who maybe have never met anybody who'd been incarcerated before can understand that, you know, they're just regular people, right? These people are brilliant. They have things to contribute, things to say, and if they're not a safety issue. So that's also part of this model is changing the narrative that way. But women need a heck of a lot more than that. They need more than education. So when we're talking about lending stability to these women, we also offer them a monthly stipend so they can use that for childcare if they need to put heating oil in their tank, to help pay their rent, whatever it is that they need. That's what that stipend is for. And in addition to that, we talked earlier about all these mental health challenges. Education is great, but we can't just put a band-aid on something. What we really need to do is get to the root causes. And so for us, that means working with some of our wonderful volunteer licensed therapists who are doing one-on-one therapy, who are running trauma healing circles for us, who are doing embodiment healing circles. So we're asking a lot of these women, and it takes a great deal of dedication, time, energy and effort and support from their family and loved ones to be part of this cohort, because we feel coming out on the other end, this is just the beginning. This is going to launch them in their career, launch them in their lives, and create dreams and goals that they never even thought were possible. But in addition to all of this work and effort, we recognize it's important to have some fun. So we're going to blow off some steam by having outings, and women have suggested things like they want to go to the botanical gardens, they want to do an escape room, they want to go roller skating, they want to have a picnic, they want to have all these really wonderful things. And we are going to work that into our curriculum as well. So it's really a super exciting time. Officially, we are launching in this fall semester, which begins here next week. Will start having their first Colby classes and all these other wonderful pieces that we've been talking about today. So we're really excited.
So the women who were accepted into the cohort, I just want to mention, you had a lot of applicants from which you selected 10. And the idea is that there will be 10 new cohort members next year and 10 new the year after that. So part of it is building a, like, I don't know if I can say this, big sister, little sister, a mentorship dimension to building a cohort model year after year after year. This isn't intended to be a once-off. You've talked about the central importance of having access to college classes for the women in the cohort, and then the sort of wraparound support structure that will hold them while they continue with their college education that they began while on the inside. And so I want to turn to that wraparound support structure. I know, Mackenzie, that's, you have a central role in the weekly meetings and in the sort of community building dimension that you felt was missing for you, and that you feel is so central, is going to be so central for this cohort of 10 women to enable them to persist in taking the college classes and being able to continue their education. Can you talk a little bit about how you see your role in the community building piece of the model that you two are launching?
Yeah, definitely. First off, I want to say that really the sisterhood is supporting itself to start, right? So we've given them a chance to kind of support each other. So they're all able to converse in texting or email, that sort of thing. So maybe they weren't able to talk to one another before. Now they have that platform. Every week we're meeting individually, just trying to figure out what it is that they might need. You know, what are the things that they're lacking? What are things that are a struggle for them? What can we possibly help them with? And then there's also a weekly meeting with all of us together where we might be able to help one another, right? Are you not able to pay your rent this month? Are you struggling with healthcare? That sort of thing, right? Because if those fundamental things are missing and we're able to help, like, we want to get those things taken care of for you so you can continue to work on your education, right? Because like Linda said previously, that's the first thing to go. So we want to make sure that we're getting you more stable in everything else in order for you to continue to move forward in your education. But we just want to create bonds inside and outside and create a family. So that's really what it's all about. And Linda, what do you think?
Yeah, I think that's a beautiful way to sum it up, Mackenzie. Really, our education cohort model is a holistic approach. And so rather than many of the programs we see focus on one piece, we want to focus on the entire hierarchy of needs, right? And all the way up that pyramid. Right? We start at the base, but we want to see you right at the peak of that pyramid. And that's sort of where we're guiding this cohort to go. And they do have, like Mackenzie said, the beauty of this is they have ownership of this. This, we are holding the space and the framework for the women to make the most of this opportunity as they can. They create their own community agreements. They're supporting each other. They're holding each other accountable. And they're going to grow as a group, and they're also going to grow as individuals. And like you mentioned earlier, Catherine, we also want to see this as an each one teach one and pull the next cohort forward, right? We want to create a group of mentors who are willing to come back, help cohort number two. Maybe cohort two is even bigger than it is, because we recognize that need since we had so many more applications than we had spots. And we suspect that will be the same next year. So it is really a way for women to personally grow, but also to find, give them ways to develop leadership skills, mentoring skills, give back to the community. And these are just as important as their education.
Thanks, Linda. We've got about a minute left, and I want to ask a remaining question that our listeners might be curious about. You're doing a lot of work internal to the cohort to community build, mutual accountability, self-support, mutual aid within the cohort. What has the response been from the outside community to this initiative? Linda, I'll come to you first.
That's a great question. I got to say, Catherine, as it's almost the opposite of my personal experience in reentry, which was a lot of slam doors in my face. When I'm reaching out and talking about this particular program and why it is so important, we have been embraced. We've had community partners in all fields. And people want to teach financial literacy classes. People want to open up. Like I told you, that we have volunteer therapists. We have Colby College in our corner. We have people who want to donate clothing, people who have offered rides to folks. It's all across the board, individuals and organizations stepping up. And I just want to say one other quick thing, a huge thank you to our major funders in making this happen, which is the Sunshine Ladies Foundation, Maine Community Foundation, and Maine Initiatives. Thank you so much, because it is their faith in this program that's really giving us this opportunity.
Thank you. And that brings us to the conclusion of the show. Huge congratulations on your success with launching this. We'll cycle back at the end of the year and do another episode to see how it went and what you learned in the course of this major new initiative. I know eyes are going to be on you in Maine and eyes are going to be on you nationally. And this really is a model that can set a new standard for how we do reentry. So huge congratulations to you both. With thanks to Bluesman Samuel James for his gift of music that opens and closes each episode in our series, and to Aaron Pyle, our sound engineer, and to Daria Cullen, our executive producer. We are Justice Radio.